I can tell a story now of how I ended up where I am now, which makes it sound incredibly logical, like every step was intentional. But in fact, I think there is an incredible amount of luck involved and unexpected events that, you know, could turn your life left or right.
You are a driven international professional or manager, have achieved quite a bit already, but are asking yourself from time to time, what do I really want? How do I want to work and live? Then this is your podcast. I'm Gina Friedrich, career and life coach for people who want to actively shape their future. Every second Thursday, I release interviews for you with inspiring, successful, as well as renowned international personalities from the world of business, NGO, and sports. They all will share with you what these questions mean to them, how they handled obstacles in their lives, and shaped their journey to where they are today. You are curious and don't want to miss anything? Sign up for this podcast right here. And now, let yourself be inspired on your very personal journey towards the future that you wish for. Hello again and welcome to episode 18, in which I got the chance to speak with Kaspar Joana. He's a partner at NEO, which is a global network of leaders who challenge conventional thinking. And he also is an active expert in business innovation and transformation for a circular economy. Kaspar will share with us how a lack of growth opportunities led him to quit his last job and how he experiences his current journey to figure out who he is. He talks about the important role of his mentor, the value of not closing off any opportunities too quickly, and what it meant to him having left home and friends for the last 4 years while stepping into the unknown. Which three new and old habits helped him throughout this discovery journey, why he left the corporate world to join an NGO, and why the capability to reinvent himself is so important to him, you will hear in this week's episode. Just a quick side note, this interview was recorded in the early days of this podcast and the audio quality improved since then, thank God. So I hope you will excuse some of the background noise you might hear. So off we go. Hi, Kaspar.
Hey, Gina, how are you?
Very good. Yeah, it's actually, yeah, super cool to hear you again. It has been quite a while.
I think the last time we probably spoke was when I left Vodafone, or just roundabout, which is about 4 years ago now.
Yeah, crazy. But I remember that, yeah, you were quite new to Düsseldorf, and I invited you to join a group of like-minded people that shortly afterwards founded Bringing Smiles. Yeah, which was a nice start into a friendship, and thank God we're still connected. I'm very happy about that. Yeah,
yeah.
To give the listeners the chance to hear a bit more about you, I would like to ask you the question, who is Kaspar Joana?
that is a probably very difficult question for myself to answer. So you know, you catch me on in a very peculiar and interesting time with this conversation, because I think, you know, after we worked at Vodafone, and then I moved to the Ellen MacArthur Foundation, which is for those who don't know, is a leading think tank on the circular economy, where I led their business innovation programs. I actually resigned from that job last December, and that was probably one of the hardest decisions I had to make, because, you know, I was working with a great team. We quadrupled in size in the organization, and the impact that we had in the growth of our program, the innovation programs across Brazil and North America and Europe. You know, leaving something like that behind, it was mostly because I knew I had to, I couldn't grow there anymore. I wanted to continue learning, and it started to feel almost too convenient and too easy. So I had to make the decision, so, okay, I need to challenge myself again. And when I did that, I realized something that sort of comes back to your question around, you know, who are you? And particularly around something around, you know, your identity. And it dawned upon me that the first couple of months, I planned to just sort of go into a bit of a discovery journey and to talk to a lot of people and see what they see and feel what is inspiring to me, and where do I get energy from. And what I started to realize is, you know, from when you're young, your identity is closely associated with the institutions and organizations that, you know, you're part of. First, it's your football club. Then you go to uni, which means, you know, the university you go to says something about who you are, I guess. And then I started working for Vodafone, you know, big brand, great name, great place to work. at least when I left it. And after that, the Ellen MacArthur Foundation, and a very influential think tank with an amazing amount of access. And people always pick up the phone when you're calling. And when you leave all of that behind, you have to almost, you sort of create this emptiness, and you have to, you're almost disentangling yourself. Like, what part of is really your identity, and what part is really you, mm-hmm. and what part is associated with the organization that you work for, or the football club that you play for, or the university that you study for. And that was a really unsettling time, which I actually found really valuable.
How did you then manage to answer these questions that you have now raised in regards to your whole life and who you are? How did you find answers, and what helped, or who helped you?
Well, I have had a professional mentor for the last, I want to say, 3 years, which was one of the best decisions that I ever took. In fact, it was actually recommended to me, and I almost wish it was recommended to me earlier. Because it's quite a daunting task to approach somebody and then ask that person who you hold in high regards, to be able to ask that person questions and fire. But it needs to be a mutually synergetic thing, right? So anyway, that's sort of one thing that I kept in mind in the process. And the other was just not to close off any opportunities too quickly. Mm-hmm. Make sure that, you know, I gave myself the time, and in fact, you know, one could argue that I'm still in the middle of it. I'm probably a little bit more in the synthesizing part of it than the discovery part of it. But I'm still finding answers day to day. But just to say that when you don't know what you want, that kind of essentially means you're in a bit of a discovery phase. And what I've really tried to do is you know, have a lot of interesting conversations, and wherever the opportunity presented itself, try stuff that you haven't done before, see if you like it, see if you don't, and then kind of trust your brain in a way to synthesize what that means to you and what sticks. It's helpful to write things down, mm-hmm. As a way to maybe, you know, bring it together a bit and have some sort of a memory, a written down memory. But then when you explore these kind of different options, you will come across one or the other opportunity that will feel right. And I'd say there, trust your gut feeling, because rationally you're able to process only so many things. But then, you know, your unconscious, the bit that is able to assimilate so many different, you know, memories and experiences and things you liked and you didn't like, that sort of all comes together in often what I believe is sort of your gut feeling. And I've made some choices recently based on that gut feeling, which, you know, we'll see in the long run if they pay out. But it certainly feels right to do the things that I'm doing now.
Which is amazing, if one can say that about a decision like you've just shared with us. So you left the foundation without really knowing what the next step in your professional career would bring you to. Wow. That's quite brave, right?
Yeah, it's probably, yeah, like I said, it's probably one of the hardest decisions I had to make, because I really enjoy working with people, and I had the opportunity there over the course of 4 years to build my own team, which at the height was about 19 people. And these are all people that you at one point or another, you know, hired and worked with, and you see them grow, and that's very humbling. And then you realize, actually, you know, I don't know if I'm growing anymore. And then, yeah, I was living on the Isle of Wight, which is a lovely little island off the coast of Southampton, where, you know, I had lots of friends there. So the foundation is based there, hence why I was living there. So the choice to leave your work then means to leave your home for the last 4 years behind, to leave your friends behind, and to step into the unknown. In a way, you know, when I left Vodafone, I also, you know, left in a way friends behind, you guys, and I left a bit of work behind. But I was stepping into a new adventure, which quickly sort of, it doesn't feel, of course, the gap that friends leave, but it does feel a void that the work that you've been doing leaves, and one identity is replaced with a new identity, I guess. Yeah, so it's a really interesting journey, and I think some of the things that I've come to realize have really helped me with that are some, I guess, new and old habits that give you some sort of a structure.
Please share them with us.
I was always, there's two probably which I've been doing for longer. One is, you know, every morning trying to read a bit of non-fictional. So some sort of an, you know, a book that's been recommended by somebody you hold in high regard, or that you've read, you heard on a podcast or something, you know, just always have something to read in the morning and just do a couple of pages. And I found that that at various times has given me inspiration or an idea to do something. And the amount of times that I've taken something that I've read that morning and tried that on that day or that week in practice or in, you know, my professional personal life, those times are so numerous that I don't think it's serendipity anymore that, you know, that happens. So I've come to find out that is a really valuable thing. And when you have more time on your hands, then you get to read more things. So that's sort of a great thing that's been certainly giving me some structure the last, you know, in my discovery journey. The other thing I'd say is exercise. It's just an amazing reset button. You know, when you try, in the last 4 years, I traveled a lot between the different continents. And then if you arrive somewhere after a long flight and you have this massive jet lag, and it's just an amazing reset button to just go for a run, clear your head. If you've had a long day, clear your head. If you can't wake up, you know, start your day with some exercise. And somehow I always get more energy out of it than it costs you, even though as soon as you sit on the couch after a long day, it could feel like the most impossible thing to get off it. And then I'd say the third thing that I probably picked up most recently is meditation. It's sort of, you know, a guided meditation course of mindfulness. And I personally followed a podcast of Sam Harris and his waking up course. I was quite skeptical of meditation. I always thought it, for the last probably, you know, 10 years, I always thought it was a bit of religious mumbo jumbo.
I'm surprised. I have to admit. Yeah, hearing you talking about meditation.
Yeah. I am quite rationally orientated, and as sort of, you know, an atheist in a way, I always thought a bit of it's like, well, that feels so esoteric. And but through listening to Sam Harris talking about meditation, it made me realize he took a lot of the religious bits out of it. And it made me realize that in fact, it could be a really useful way to train your mind. And it could just be a tool.
Yeah.
You know, and the one big interface you have with the rest of the world that decides your actions on a day-to-day basis is how you respond to it. And being able to control how you respond to it is just an amazing additional extra option. And by no means have I mastered it. But just in the last month of being able to do that 10 minutes a day, and I must say I'm more or less keeping up. I might miss a day or two every now and then.
I share that actually. I use the app Calm, which is an amazing app as well. And I need the listening to someone. At least I think then it's easier really to follow and to not be distracted and follow my thoughts that go in circles. But it's an amazing way to really create more awareness about what happens in our day-to-day carousel of thoughts, and trying to use this awareness in order to realize or to be aware of the fact that we can decide on whether and how we react on emotions and triggers. If, for example, we just let something bring us down, or if we really reflect on the situation and realize what it is that triggers us. So I really, really benefit from that as well, since, I don't know, 1.5 years or so. I can only agree to what you just shared.
And yeah, it definitely works on an emotions level, but also, you know, being when your ego is challenged, just being able to then step back and say, where's this coming from? This is my ego being challenged. All right, I can choose to engage with it, or I can also choose to let it go. I mean, it's easier said than done, right? I mean, I've been angry in me as well, so it's not that. Yeah, you know, at the least, it's a 10 minutes of quiet downtime that allows you to just take a bit of a break in whatever stressful day you're having. And at best, it's a training tool that over time will give you, you know, some interesting abilities that you otherwise wouldn't have.
Yeah. I was just thinking, when you were talking, you said that you know that you're right where you are. And looking at your career path so far, it looks like, besides a short stint working at a bank, it looks like you really were quite sure early in your career that you know your path and what you wanted to do professionally, which happened to be the world of sustainability. Was that the case? Did you have a plan, or did you know that this is going to be your path?
Well, yeah, probably two things. One is, I ended up working in sustainability, but I don't think that is my calling. It's at the moment probably the most logical place where I could practice complexity and systems thinking, which is a topic in itself. It's essentially systems thinking is a way to view the world. And I kind of picked that up when I was doing human movement sciences, which has nothing to do with what I'm doing now, other than it's based on, the human body is a complex, dynamic and adaptive system. And it's made up of multiple, small interacting parts, and they collective create the sort of function. And businesses are no different. And I ended up working in circular economy because that was probably the most pragmatic and practical framework that was applying systems thinking to how businesses operate. Now, the upside is that happens to have all of these environmental and social benefits, because if you fix the system, then good things will follow from it. I mean, it's a bit maybe too short summary, but so I sort of probably say system thinking and complexity thinking is more of a fundamental theme in my career, be it, studying human movement sciences, which is all about the human body, and then discovering the circular economy and developing the circular economy program for Vodafone. And then after that, for a circular economy foundation, develop the innovation programs that are built on systems thinking. So the way that we set up our innovation program for the last 4 years, where there were businesses and governments and universities and startups all working together to try to realize this circular economy. That was all based on this idea of, the world is a complex adaptive system. And we created essentially this playground for enlightened leaders to find the people in those businesses, to find, we will bring in the buckets and the spades and the sand, but they would, they would build their own sandcastles. They would develop their own answers. So you get this much more, systems thinking way of developing innovation. I kind of sort of discovered that over the course of following where I thought interesting things were. And then it only really dawned upon maybe 3-4 years that the central theme in that was systems thinking. The other thing is that I think the mind always plays this kind of trick on you, that when you look forward, there's so much unpredictability, but when you look back, you tend to rationalize your past. So I can tell a story now of how I ended up where I am now, which makes it sound incredibly logical, like every step was intentional. But in fact, I think there is an incredible amount of luck involved and unexpected events that, could turn your life left or right. And, just realizing this nuance that the world will throw an incredible amount of things at you, and most of them are unexpected. So you're going to get stuck if you think there's one path to success. And so what I think is very important is to always have this this thing that Nassim Taleb calls optionality. So if you have always a series of options in your back pocket of things that might just lead you to living a successful and fulfilling life, and they might be very different things. And to some, that might feel like a bit of a distraction from, leading to that one big goal that you want to achieve. But in fact, when you're facing something unexpected, you're very happy that you have options, because then you can all of a sudden take a different route. It gives you flexibility, and it allows you to follow, not just one possible path, but actually depend. You can act on circumstances.
I'm just thinking, was the opportunity for you to work, to leave the business industry to work for a charity foundation, was that one of these opportunities that you just grabbed?
Yeah, well, in a way it was. But my ambition was never to work for a charity. I'd say that probably came out wrong, but it never was it high on my list to say, I'm going to work for a charity. It just happened to be the place where I could focus on a topic that I enjoyed and the way of working that I enjoyed and an amount of flexibility that I wanted in my life. Because that was one of the big frustrations that I ran into a corporate environment, is that it just limits your flexibility, and you know you're always, it comes with great benefits, but it also comes with restrictions. And I felt I wanted to explore a freer environment where I could follow more sort of my ideas, as opposed to having to negotiate every idea and before I can actually act on it. So that was probably more important to me, and that's why I made the decision to join the Ellen MacArthur Foundation. But you know, the program that I ran was a very commercially run program. With you know, we sold essentially innovation service to big organizations, and that came with deliverables and margins and targets and so forth. But it was always a temporary thing to go to the NGO world, and so I've returned to the commercial world now again.
Hmm. What was driving you throughout that time? You were just talking us through all the options that might have come up or paths that might have opened up, and you were going for one or the other. What was driving you? What was the trigger for you to follow any of these directions?
I think a sense of curiosity, knowing that, you know, I probably start to form this opinion maybe a bit later, so it's a bit difficult to say that it really drove my decisions. But I do believe that, you know, in the time, the day and age that we live in, the duration that skill is valid or valuable is just shortening. Just, you know, you can work as a data scientist, but, you know, in a number of years, your job will be taken over. Initially, you could be working in a factory for, you know, a skill in 30 years of your life, and you would just perfect that skill. But now, you know, change comes faster. So what becomes more important than ever is almost that dynamic capability of being able to reinvent yourself. That is something that has been driving a lot of my decisions, and why, you know, I can probably, yeah, like I said, I can stitch my history together and make it sound like a logical story. But human movement sciences, business studies, a big corporate, an NGO, and now starting a new business with two partners in the UK. Yeah, I mean, it could also be seen as pretty random. So I think it's more sort of this ability to be able to challenge yourself continuously and reinvent yourselves in a way, while not losing some of those, you know, core things that you hold as a valuable thing in your work-life balance.
Mm-hmm. If someone close to you would approach you and telling you about maybe a wish or an idea in regards to reinventing him or herself, maybe a new challenge or an idea or a wish, maybe even in regards to doing more meaningful work, what would you answer?
Try it. Do it. Yeah, I mean, it's always a daunting task to step into the unknown. One advice I'd certainly give is first try the things that you think are interesting. See if you can apply them in your existing job. And I say that for two reasons. One is because, you know, a lot of, I'd say most organizations would value some sort of innovation that you bring into it, some sort of new perspective. And if you follow your curiosity, then you tend to bring in something new if you try that within your own organization. The other thing is that, you know, the grass can look greener on the other side. So if you have some way of being just a little bit more certain, if it's not just, it just looks better there, or is it actually something that you'd like to do? And if that then sort of starts to feel like something you'd like to do more of, so it fuels the excitement, then the other thing I'd say is, you know, try to build some financial security that will give you some runway to try something new. And yeah, you read things of, if you're 40, what would you recommend your 20-year-old self? And it's always the same list. It's spend more time with family. It's start saving. And there's probably something out there. But,
but saving or shaving? I understood shaving. Sorry, that's why.
Maybe shaving too. But all our hipsters these days. Saving. And, you know, not having to, having the luxury not to worry about, you know, how am I going to put bread on the table tomorrow? It just gives an amazing amount of options. It reveals an amazing amount of options and gives some peace of mind. I mean, it's a luxury, right? I fully acknowledge that. But if there's a chance that you can build that reserve somehow, you know, you're going to thank yourself one day for it.
I would like to go one step back. Now you are, by the way, for everyone who's listening, Casper just moved back to Amsterdam, to his home city. But yeah, Casper, you were living abroad before. You moved to Germany, like to Düsseldorf, then you moved to an island in England. I'm just curious, maybe you can share with our listeners a bit about the predominant feeling that you had when you decided leaving home for work.
It was never a really, you know, difficult, conscious decision. I guess it just sort of go with the flow. And I also grew up moving around quite a bit. So my mom was working for UN and WFP and later the Dutch government. And, you know, we lived in the early years of my life. I lived in Africa and then later we lived in the Caribbean. So living abroad was never a, you know, it didn't feel like an amazing leap of sorts. So I made the call, I guess. Definitely my parents gave me the opportunity to just follow my curiosity, which led me to study human movement sciences, not having to necessarily think about, you know, what are you going to be after that? Or and then I was able to make a switch to business after I did my first master's. And then, yeah, just sort of saying, you know, I want to give my career every opportunity to develop, and I don't really care where that takes me. So then it happened to take me to Düsseldorf, I guess. And then it happened to take me to the Isle of Wight, you know, which is a really small island.
Yeah, I think a lot of people here in Düsseldorf were surprised.
Yeah, as was I, because actually, you know, one of the reasons that I initially thought I was going to leave Vodafone is because I thought Düsseldorf felt a little bit too small.
Congratulations.
So then I ended up living in a town with 13,000 people. It's like, all right, okay, there's almost more cows in this town than there's people. So it's like, well.
But even though you had all this openness and you were curious, was there something that worried you?
Yeah. Oof. Saying goodbye to friends and things that you know comes with us with a certain amount of insecurity and comes with uncertainty. And yeah, I mean, there's definitely sort of a worry that, you know, will you fit into the new place? Who will you meet? And will there be nice colleagues? And how will the work be? And am I now, you know, complete idiot for going to live on an island? Or, you know, whoever said that living in Düsseldorf would be fun? Or I think those are very natural things to worry about or to think about and be sort of like, it's as much as exciting as it is daunting at times.
Would there be anything that you could maybe share that helped you overcoming this feeling of, wow, I'm leaving all my friends and family behind?
Yeah, quickly running into new friends. The environment I walked into and disturbed with you guys is very welcoming and trying to sort of, you know, you got to go out there and find people because chances of them finding you are a lot slimmer when you actually expose yourself to the situations that allow you to find new people. But equally with the foundation, you know, it was a very welcoming and very sort of, you know, family feeling like organization when I arrived there. And that really helps because I knew a number of them already through the work that I was doing at Vodafone. We had a business relation between Vodafone and the foundation. So I had encountered a number of the people already. So I kind of knew. And I think, you know, if you make a decision to go to a new job, it's as much they wanting you as you should want to go there. And if you want to go somewhere, you need to know what you know, to at least have the opportunity to see what you end up in. Which I had, actually both those decisions to move. I had the opportunity for a second and a third interview to meet a number of the people that you does it feel good?
What was something? I mean, you can choose whether we talk about your stint to Germany or to the Isle of Wight. What surprised you most?
How much I didn't know. You know, when you that isn't that the second stage of learning that you're consciously you feel consciously incompetent. So you realize that there's a lot of things that you don't know, and that's quite a sobering experience. And that's I think it. Well, yeah, in both situations, and now I even though I feel confident that I know things, then I try to at least maybe. Thing to remind myself that I might not know it. I don't know, is that answering your question?
Thank you very much. You were already mentioning that you're on your discovering journey right now, or you still kind of feel like you're in it. I'm curious now to see where we see you next, where we hear about you.
Yeah, as am I. As am I. Yeah, no, I mean, it'd be interesting to see, because I think in the last couple of months I started to, you know, develop a bit of an idea of where I want to be in 5 to 10 years and the type of role that I want to do. And I think for me, it's much about, you know, creating the options now to see if there is a pathway that could lead me there. And, you know, if I end up somewhere else, then equally great. And I sort of came up with this. I like working with people. I like, you know, working with new ideas. I like working with both incremental and exponential new ideas, and then sort of creating the environment where these kind of ideas land and thrive and become new, you know, solutions. In other words, a bit towards CIO, COO kind of role. And let's see if I end up there or not. It'd be interesting to listen to this podcast in 5 to 10 years.
Let's see if there's going to be another interview then. No, but it feels like you're that you're super well reflected, and that you know what it is that you need and what you expect and how you want to live and work. So all the best, and enjoy this exciting time that you're in right now.
Yeah, thanks. And you know, it might sound like I've figured it all out now, but maybe by tomorrow I realize actually all of this was, you know, something new has come along which put this all in new light. So nothing is permanent.
That's nice.
Yeah, thanks for this. Yeah, it was interesting to reflect.
Thanks a lot for sharing all this so openly, Casper, and speak to you soon.
Speak soon. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Did you like this episode and don't want to miss out on more inspiration? Sign up for this podcast right here or on Spotify, Apple or Android Podcasts, Deezer or TuneIn. And now have a colorful day ahead. Bye.